I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Canadian politics is made more satirical, more fun, and more thoughtful in a new novel, Sussex Drive. Its author, Linda Svensson, joins me now. Like any good satire, it takes recent political history and current Canadian political culture, makes up some names, and creates fascinating characters that look somewhat familiar, but are completely the genius of the author. I've started it, and it's hard to put down. It's incredibly insightful. The book is an alternate history of recent political events told through the perspective of two strong female characters, Becky Leggett, the wife of a conservative prime minister, and her neighbor down the street at Rideau Hall, the Governor-General, Lise Lavoie. Her Excellency is described as wildly exotic and an unlikely immigrant governor-general, while the prime minister's wife is a sublimely capable and manipulative wife. I'll get Ms. Vincent to tell us about the book, these characters, and the political events that inspired all of this. Linda Svensson is a distinguished writer whose work has been published here in Canada, the United States, and Germany. Her collection, Marine Life, was a critical hit and made into a movie. She co-produced and co-wrote the miniseries Human Cargo, which received 7 Gemini Awards and a Peabody Award. She is a professor in the creative writing program at the University of British Columbia. The book is published by Random House. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Linda Svensson. Ms. Svensson, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I don't read very much fiction, but what I liked about your book, what I like about it is that it's fun, and at the same time it's familiar, because it talks about the sort of political culture that I'm fascinated with, that I follow, you know, like any good political junkie.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously follow politics yourself, right?
I do. And I'd say that it was the 2008 prorogation that really caught my interest. I don't know if you remember where mm-hmm. you were at the time, but I had been reading graduate applications at home, and it's wonderful to read the MFA applications at UBC where I teach, because we have some extraordinary graduates and terrific students. So I was, you know, happily, you know, engaged in doing that. But around this time, I think the fiscal update had occurred, and we started hearing rumors about coalition. And after that, the events seemed to just to multiply, and we were all waiting for the Governor General to return from Europe and figure out the future of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was as earth-shakingly interesting as the recount in 2000 with Bush
yep.
and Gore,
mm-hmm.
and the War Measures Act when I was, you know, a teenager. And I just, you know, I thought, nobody can tell me that Canadian politics is boring. I just find it absolutely fascinating, and I couldn't stop thinking about that prorogation.
Yeah, and looking at some of the notes on the back of the book and some of the books that you read, sort of to get the insight of what it's like in there. I remember at the time of all this, I used to talk to Ted McWinney quite often, the constitutional scholar who advised, I guess, Adrian Clarkson. In, I guess, it was 06 or so when she had her own constitutional issues with the Martin government. It really is fascinating when you think about it, that the state of the nation, say, or the government, is decided by one person like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too. I remember I saved all the newspapers from mm-hmm. from that time, and even the constitutional experts weren't necessarily in agreement on the way things
on what to
go.
Do. Yeah,
yeah, and there was a lot. It seemed as if the Canadian public wasn't really sure about how Parliament worked, how the Constitution worked, how any of it worked. And I'm not an expert. I'm not a pundit. But when something as important as who's your Prime Minister the next day is on, you know, is up for discussion, I think it, you know, it'd be good if we did know.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the characters in the book. So the Leggetts, he's the prime minister. He's got a minority government, right? He's a conservative minority prime minister.
Mm-hmm. From the Yukon.
Right.
From the Northwest.
And then you have Mrs. Leggett. Mm-hmm. She's a character in the book. And then you have Madame Lavoie, who's the governor general. For people listening to this who obviously haven't read the book, does the Governor General and the wife of the Prime Minister, do they get along?
Well, they're they're like BFFs because they're put together in a fishbowl, and they need to get along, and they share activities with their kids, hiking, Harrington Lake, that sort of thing. And I think the difficulty that comes between them is in the form of the Prime Minister, because the politics of the Governor General are different, although I never really get into specifying exactly what they are. But she's more, I think, distressed by the manner of the decisions and how they're you know, brought forward to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so the women, become not stressed, but I'd say that the wife of the Prime Minister, Becky, becomes, she's an advocate for her husband and in some ways plays the Governor General. And the Governor General has her own agenda. Lise has her son to deal with, who's he's part First Nations. And she has her own history from an African country that she's, you know, starting to care more about. So there are different issues that come up between them. And they're both really canny.
Mm-hmm.
They're both, I think, doing the best they can. As moms, they've got quite a few struggles, and it's, I think, exceedingly difficult to raise your kids in public, let alone, you know, privately. And they have a real battle going.
I'm assuming you didn't get to talk to Mrs. Harper in the course of writing this book.
Oh, my goodness, God, no.
Yeah.
I have no clue about her life or any of that.
Yeah.
I was basically using the skeleton of real events,
yeah,
and imagining what my particular characters would go through if they were handling these problems in their own way.
Yeah. If you had the chance to talk to her, what would you have wanted to ask her?
Oh, I wouldn't have wanted to talk to her, because I didn't talk to anyone in Ottawa about the book.
Yeah.
I didn't interview any MPs or backroom people. It's totally fabricated in terms of the personal lives and the situations. I was basically looking at real events in the country, but taking them slant. And
so,
I think also it's an extension of my earlier writing. I write about families in the screenplays I've written, and in my short stories. I'm often looking at women who are in domestic situations which are polarized or exceedingly difficult to navigate. So I see it as an extension. It's, you know, it's another dysfunctional family, but this one happens to be in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And they happen to be neighbors.
Now, you could easily write, say, an op-ed about political events happening in the country, a blog, or, say, go on Twitter and talk about what you think about politics, current events, as a citizen. Do you use your fiction? Do you use these characters, say, to say what you want to say?
Well, I've written it for myself, for sure. I mean, and it was really enjoyable to write it. I was deeply engaged in it. I hadn't realized I was so Canadian. However, as I said, I'm not a pundit. I'm not a political scientist. I'm a fiction writer, and I'm a screenwriter. And how I put things out there is in those particular genres. So it's not my style to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in doing that.
The one thing I remember in the beginning part of the book was so how well you captured the times, because you forget little things like remember when the luncheon meat was tainted or
yeah the book starts out with listeriosis
and the
food minister, I think, says hysteriosis.
Yeah.
One
forgets about that because it's, 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that was a big deal. I mean, that was, everyone was thinking about that at the time. And I think that's the gift of this book, is that it reflects those times back to us.
Well, don't you think the news cycle just works so quickly?
Exactly.
I mean, you talk about 24-hour news cycle. I almost think we're down to 12 hours.
Yeah.
by the, you know, can hear something at breakfast and never hear about it again at dinner.
Right.
And there's so many sources of news, too. So, but I started the book in 2010, and I thought it would be a short story. And then there was that second prorogation in December 2009, and then I thought, you know, gee, I think there's a novel here. And I had an outline, and I had lots of notes, so, you know, those kinds of details stuck with me. But even now, the Beijing Olympics, which are also in the book, seem like a long time ago because we've had Vancouver's and London. You know? But it's not so long ago.
No. Canadian politics in fiction. I guess Terry Fallis, he's had some success with that recent years. Yeah, Bill Devereaux, one of his recent novels was set in Ottawa. This is new and it's fresh in the sense that you're writing about Canadian politics from, say, a female perspective. Do you think that's important that we have that? I mean, Terry and Bill, they've done their work, but the female characters there weren't necessarily as strong as they are in yours.
I think it is important, and I think in general, Canada is underrepresented to itself at this time.
Yeah.
I know as a screenwriter and as a novelist now too, when I see books like The Ghost Rider,
mm-hmm.
which looks at, it's a Polanski film as well, looks at, seems to be Romana Clayfer, Tony Blair, and Cherie Blair, and, it's a great thriller. And something like Game Change, nonfiction, mm-hmm. but you read it like it's a novel, Primary Colors, Romana Clay. I haven't read American Wife by Curtis Sittenfeld, which I believe is a portrait of Laura Bush's biography, and Ann Beattie's one about Pat Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very interested in all of that, and it's a mystery to me why Canadian political figures aren't, why we aren't looking at our own country. And I'm wondering if, for myself personally, I think it probably arose for me because I've spent, two decades writing television films for the CBC until, it's become, I think, more of a populist kind of public broadcaster. But, I did an adaptation of The Diviners. I did a biopic of Sue Rodriguez based on Lisa Hobbs-Burney's book.
Mm-hmm.
And, I did adaptations of Away, which features Darcy McGee and that whole political situation back in the 1800s. And immigration as well.
Yeah.
So I used to get my fix that way. I would, I'd be able to drop into a time or a person's life and become very involved. They're very Canadian. And there's less opportunities for that now. And so something like the prorogation, the two prorogations, which I pitched as a movie or a miniseries at the Banff Television Festival to some other producers. But the answer I would get was, yeah, it's a great story, but you need a book.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I'll write the book.
Say, did you read any of Judy LaMarche's novels?
No.
She had written, this would have been the 70s. I read one of them. It's a woman becomes a minister in a government. And then the second book, she becomes the prime minister.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, and it's a shame that they're forgotten because I was thinking of the cabinet minister novel that she wrote. The woman there is very different than the women in this book, because the women in this book, they are married, they have children. I guess in her book, they were sort of modeled. Modeled after her, mm-hmm. and that they were, these were single women, spinsters almost in politics. That's the thing about your book that I'm finding fascinating is that you have these women who juggle their lives. I mean, they're busy lives. They have husbands and they have kids. Yet I don't really the male politicians in this country. We don't really know the relationship, say, with their kids or. It doesn't seem to be as big a priority or get as much attention, say, as when women deal with these sorts of things.
It's true, but, I was thinking about, I have to write a talk for the Ben McNally Brunch in Toronto this weekend, mm-hmm. I started thinking a lot about Pierre Trudeau, and I remember, like, when he was raising his voice, we saw a lot of photographs, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yeah.
We were involved in that family, and I was even thinking about, I mean, I was a teenager when Margaret Trudeau, a teenager herself, married Trudeau, and, you know, I remember feeling almost proud, you know, when she was at Studio 54 in New York, or there was this feeling of like, yeah, Canada can get down too, we can party too. And a sense of connection with that family,
mm-hmm.
and extreme sadness when the marriage didn't work. And I wasn't in the country during the Mulroney years. I was in New York and Boston and San Francisco. But I'm not sure how that family played. In some ways, that's a deficit, and you know, in what I bring to this novel because. I just don't have a sense of how, you know, were there photos, were we all involved in the family, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think we were in terms of the Mulroneys, but it's interesting to see how the women themselves deal with it in your book, because you know, Brian Mulroney, Pierre Trudeau, I mean, they didn't really, I mean, we saw pictures, but we didn't really get to see sort of the in graphic detail, if I can use that. Term as we see in this book. Is this a book that you enjoyed writing?
Oh, did I ever?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved writing it. And I wrote it really quickly. I sold it around this time last year to Random House, and I think it was about 160 pages with an outline for the rest. And then I was, you know, the editors were amazing in terms of keeping me on track, and I think I basically finished it just in July.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I veered off at one point and wrote an ending with the Governor General in heaven, and they said, oh, we don't think we want that. Come back to Earth.
Yeah. Will we see this on television one day?
I hope so.
Yeah. It would look great. I mean, just reading it and thinking about the characters, it would just be great to see what they sort of look like and the sort. What has the reaction been from, say, the Ottawa crowd?
I haven't heard so much from Ottawa. McLean's Anne Kingston really liked it.
Yeah. There's a great line in her review. I'm trying to remember what it was now. I have it here.
You can't fool us.
Yeah. Well, I like the part where she was talking about that you could make a non-confidence motion or bickering about the Constitution interesting.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's really nice. And Toronto Stars just came out on the weekend. But Ottawa, I'll be there next week, and I'll be able to gauge the reaction, I think.
Yeah,
I understand the bookstores are very excited about it.
Yeah, you have people like on the back of the book, people like John English, Terry Fallis, who we've mentioned already, Stevie Cameron. I mean, they know Ottawa, they know politics pretty well, and they like the book, right?
Yeah.
Did you say anything in the book about journalism in this country and about how political journalism is being conducted?
Well, I think in the point of view of some of the characters I did, I think Lise at one point when she's reading the speech from the throne has a fairly long, quiet rant in her own head about media. I think that's there. About the country itself. And that's from her point of view. And I think Becky at some point talks about Canada being dumbed down, and it's to her advantage at some point. But everything is not necessarily my opinion. It's the opinions of those characters in their particular situations at a particular time.
Yeah. So you teach at UBC. That's full-time for you, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you find that the writing's good there?
Oh, well, our graduates include Annabelle Lyon,
right.
Stephen Galloway, cellist of Sarajevo,
right.
Carol Chauvin's just coming out with a book, Into Thin Air, or Into the Abyss, I believe. And, I mean, there's just so many writers coming from that program. It's astounding.
Yeah.
It's the water.
Yeah. And then the students coming into the program. I mean, I don't know. How does that work as a teacher, as a professor? Do you see talent? I mean, you obviously they have a goal while they're with you,
mm-hmm.
and you have your job obviously to do. But beyond say an assignment or beyond whatever they're working on, do you see good writing there?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens is it's a culture, and I mean, undergraduate classes can be quite large. I mean, you can have 180 students in a first or second year class, but after that, the workshops tend to be smaller, 16 students, and then at the graduate level, 12 students. And some of these students have been writing for a long time, and they're writing in different genres. So let's say by the time, and I think a difference that's been made too is blogging and all the digital media. They're still reading novels, and they still see the films, but I think they're writing a lot more, and they're just very sophisticated. And I think when you have so many bright minds focused on the best outcome for a work, it's not like a seance, but there's really a lovely hum that can happen when you have 16 heads bent over some work and you're trying to get at an essential truth about being human. I have a class this afternoon that I'm teaching, and the story there that's just blown me away. It's a first work I've seen from this young writer, and it's just so smart, and the techniques he's used to tell the story are, I don't know where he's got them from, but he's using them really brilliantly. And if he wasn't, it would be a more mundane kind of piece about someone losing their home and having a heart attack. I mean, very movie of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But he's elevated it to the extent I'd say just, you know, you have to send this out and get it published. And he's really young. He's only in third or fourth year.
Really?
Yeah, and you just get gifts like this.
Yeah. This book, this is not for this is really for everyone, right? This is not just for people that are interested in politics.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I mean, I think probably someone who follows politics as closely as you will probably get more out of it, because there's insider references and sort of jokes and things happening throughout that refer to real events and take a twist on them. But I'm hoping, let's say my niece who says, I'm going to read it, but I don't know politics. I'm hoping she'll enjoy it. It's not meant to turn anyone on to politics. It's just meant to, you know, say, hi, this is our country, and here's a take on it.
Yeah, I can't wait to finish it. Good luck with the book, Linda.
Where are you?
I'm, what am I, a quarter into it?
Oh, okay.
October 08, I think I'm just starting that chapter.
Oh, great. Okay, well, let's talk again after.
We'll do, yeah. The book is called Sussex Drive. It's published by Random House. Its author, Linda Svensson, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.